and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we're wondering, is it okay to celebrate Danny's second goal yet? In association with Flowers Unlimited. Well, then, we are basking in the joy of the hangover that followed a lunchtime kickoff victory that saw our boys in blue edge past the champions Liverpool on Saturday. It was a win not without controversy, as the whole stadium and Danny himself thinking he was offside, but let's face it, we were due a little bit of luck. It was also a win that made it four wins out of the last five as we looked to gain some momentum as we pushed towards those European places. It's a shame then that we don't play again until the 11th of April. In other news, there was a Brighton player in Thomas Tuchel's latest England squad, just not the one we thought it was going to be, as Jason Steele will be the one linking up with the Free Lions squad ahead of the friendlies against Uruguay and Japan. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the one and only Tom Hyland. Hello, Tom. Nice to see you. Nice to see you actually in the country for a change, other than like swanning around, watching rugby all over the place.
I've been in the country a while now, actually, getting itchy feet.
Oh, dear. Is that the Japanese player that you were watching in rugby? Itchy
well,
feet.
You know, doing a bit of scouting on the side for the Albion, just picking up some unheard of talent, I think, for the next.
Fantastic.
You are a scout, so it's.
Well, how many Japanese players are heard of? I mean, it's almost like a. not an oxymoron, it's the other. It's a tautology, isn't it? An unheard of Japanese player. Well, apart from Mitoma, how many are heard of?
Yeah. Well, there's actually quite a lot in playing in the Premier League now. And actually, the Japanese team's going to be at Wembley this week as well. So, or next week.
I assume Mitoma's in the squad.
He is.
Yes, yep. He will be. Well, we'll be talking about him very shortly when we talk about the wonderful victory, Tom, that we saw on Saturday. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a massive fan of the early kickoffs, but When you win, what could possibly go wrong?
They're the most dangerous kickoff times, aren't they?
Well, for your health, you mean.
Well, that 5:45s are quite dangerous for that as well, because you're not like knowing what most football fans are like. If it's a 3 o'clock kickoff or a 5:45 kickoff, you still leave home at exactly the same time and go to the pub at exactly the same time.
Yeah, it's a post match with the 12:30s. You suddenly look at your watch and go, "Oh, it's only 7 o'clock."
but therein lies the point, the perfect time of year where, because it was around the equinox, the spring equinox, we got out there for about 2:30, so we've got about 3.5 hours of sunlight left. If it was a 5:45 kickoff, yeah, you'd have some beforehand, but afterwards, I mean, let's face it, when you're basking in a victory like that, and I hearken back to the game 3 or 4 years ago, whatever it was, when we beat Manchester United 4-0, it was near the end of the season. It was probably close to the end of April. Again, it was actually kind of, I also remember it so well, it was kind of more of a watery sunset afternoon.
Yeah. Well, that's
when the game is done and you're basking in such a brilliant victory, and for me, that game is still one of my all-time favourites at the Amex.
I mean, you say watery Suns, I've got translucent light. Have you got anything you want to add to the mix there, Tom?
No, I was just going to say that the watery sunset was just Ronaldo's tears coming through.
As he was leaning against the goalpost, yeah. But there is just something about that light, though, isn't there? I mean, I remember that there was that game against Bristol City with Dean on that Easter Monday where Lee Steele definitely wasn't offside.
I've seen that several times, and I can tell you he wasn't offside. I know he was convinced he was, but I've seen it several times. He wasn't.
Now,
it's true.
That's a subject we're going to be talking about.
No more than that, Danny Welbeck was.
But okay. Well, let's talk about this, because it was a great victory, and you know, and it continues this amazing run that we've been on. And we're going to talk about changing the narrative in a little bit. But I know this is going to annoy Alton, but I'm going to ask you the question anyway. This run of form does seem to have coincided with us putting out a more consistent team. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely at least a coincidence with that. So I think it's good, but I think it's also just having people that Hertzler clearly trusts. So it's a much older spine going through the team, partnerships that have been building, and just more consistency in that. So I think the players have kind of got used to each other a bit more in terms of week to week. But I think it's more a subtle change in some of the way that we've been playing, and there's clearly been an emphasis put in to kind of up in the intensity, up in the press a bit more, and trying to stop teams playing, whereas before I feel like we were quite soft on the break especially. So when we lost possession, that's when we seem to really, really struggle, whereas actually there's a bit more bite in midfield. And I don't know whether that's Milner just kind of being a general in the center. There definitely has been a change the last few weeks.
But
there was a stat that was put out by Liverpool, actually, a Liverpool fans group this week. Said James Milner covered more ground than the entire Liverpool midfield put together at the weekend.
Well, stats for stats' sake, but the mere point is that I think it was something that Henry Winter posted at half time. Milner, a 40 years old, running around like a 20-year-old. The fact he's 40, I think, is by the by. The man is a machine, and will probably keep. He'll probably be carrying on sprinting down, chasing down an attacking forward on the day of his funeral. He has, like you say, that sitting. In, he's not even just, like I say, sitting in the middle of the park directing everyone. He's putting in the energy. You just can't do that these days. He's putting in the energy. When there's a mistake, he's rectifying it. He's showing the others how to do it. When you've watched Brighton Unlocked and all those various videos and all the tributes that have been paid, certainly to Milner when he got his 654th league appearance, you could see. Now, what they're saying, they're not saying it for our benefit. They're saying for all those other players, this is what you bring to us, and we thank you for it. Because I suspect that actually, without the likes of Milner, Hertzler's job would be so much more difficult.
Yeah, I think also there just seems to be a better understanding on the pitch at the moment. Through kind of December, January, it almost felt like the players weren't quite sure what the game plan was or where they should be pressing or where they shouldn't. And it just was all kind of a bit of a mess. Whereas now it almost feels like things have been simplified. The message is a bit clearer and the players are all on board. So I don't know whether that's the players and the coaching staff coming together after the Palace game and, you know, the Liverpool game and Villa game, and just really saying, actually, we need to have a bit of a reset, focus on how to defend first, and win games. I mean, it's no coincidence in the sense that we've conceded three goals over the last five games as well.
Okay, I mean, if you're going to say, if you put it that way, I mean, if you rewind back to that Aston Villa game and Carlos Baliba getting that early yellow card and subsequently being subbed off after 20 minutes, do you think the fact that James Milner came on in that position, it kind of happen, not necessarily by accident, because, you know, the guy is 40 years old, he's been around for a long time, everyone knows exactly what he brings to the party, but do you think that we just kind of like stumbled upon a formation in that game that actually this works?
But then I don't think it stumbled across, because I think last season when Milner was playing, we had a similar kind of strength in the middle, and when he has started games, there's generally been a solid bit. It's just the fact that through the entire middle portion of this season, he's been playing 1 or 2 minutes at the end. And there's kind of been that weird narrative around the fact that just getting appearances to make the record.
But if you're talking about performances generally, and not just Milner, but everyone generally, let's rewind back to about, and I can't remember the running order of it, but let's talk about those Everton, Fulham, Bournemouth games where we could have got more and didn't, and we were diddled out certain things. And even actually in our four wins in five, it's clear we were diddled out of a potential goal, which VAR have since admitted. What was happening there was, all right, Welbeck was diddled out of a goal. Bournemouth were gifted a goal with a ridiculous penalty decision. So if you're talking about how they were playing, I think they were doing that very similar way. They just weren't getting the results. And I genuinely think they're trying to do against Palace. See, when Palace had the ball, and let's face it, they were rubbish. When they had the ball, they didn't do a great deal with it. So off the ball, I thought we were actually pretty decent and still showed plenty of energy. It's just the anathema was that when we had the ball against Palace, we didn't have a clue what to do with it. And I could argue that Palace did a number on us, or you could argue that the players collectively went to pieces. Now, since then, obviously, we've had the Villa game since. But since then, the record, current record, 4 wins in 5. And you could argue, 4 wins and what should have been a draw in 5 has seen a turnaround. In terms of performances, not massively. What we stopped doing until the Liverpool game was stop making so many stupid mistakes. Not looking at you, skipper.
But Tom?
it's one of those things, and I've completely lost my train of thought as you were speaking, Al, but I'm
Sorry.
sure I was going to say something
Al's
really
not here. We've got
disappointing.
Sean Dyche with us today.
I know. He
No.
celebrated a bit too hard that second goal, I
He
think.
must have done.
So yeah,
I
ignore
was
me.
just talking about generally about the performances, those particular three
Oh,
games.
that
It's like
not bad.
Palace was like kind of like a fulcrum.
Yeah. But I think where it is, as you kind of said, off the ball we were really struggling, and that's kind of where we've conceded silly goals throughout the season is on transition, and that kind of change of possession. But I think what's kind of markedly improved over the recent weeks is our effort off the ball, the intensity off the ball, and actually a much more cohesive unit across the pitch, which I think has made it very difficult for teams to play against us. And it's more like kind of going back to the start of last season, or seasons before, where actually teams couldn't quite work out how to get through us, and we had a very solid spine at the back and through the middle. And I think on Saturday as well, I know that Milner clearly played very well, but I think Van Hecke had a great game, and I think Gomez also had a great game. So through that spine in the middle, Liverpool just couldn't really do much around us.
I mean, Van Hecke was my man of the match at the weekend. I thought he was just absolutely immense. And like, those progressive ball carries he's getting better at, and he's doing more and more often. It's like Liverpool just couldn't deal with him.
Well, it's the sort of thing that Dunk used to do. And I always harken back to when Guy Butters was playing for us. He said, I got Elabd or I got Elphick to do all the work for me, and I just mopped up the mess. It's almost what Dunk does. Van Hecke does, he does the junior's work. Like I say, he does the ball
Webster
carrying.
was good, brilliant at
Webster,
that as
that's a good
well.
point, actually. Webster does. I keep forgetting he's coming back. Maybe hopefully back next season. Yeah. Wouldn't that be something if we could get him back for the last two or three games? I mean, I don't know what the score is with him, but yeah. The point I was actually making, Tom, was actually I thought we were reasonable off the ball. The thing that really worries me about the team is not necessarily the tenacity or the intensity or anything like that. It's actually the finishing. That's the thing that worries me. Now we've had some good results, and we've kept some clean sheets, but for the amount of chances we create, and I mean some good chances, and let's face it, and I know we'll talk about it in the Liverpool game, we could have easily had another three or four, and they were good chances.
We're clearly not scoring enough goals. I mean, basically last season, obviously this is after 38 games. Last season we scored 66 goals in the Premier in the league alone. This year so far after 30, we're on 39. So I mean, obviously we had last year was a bit of an anomaly with the fact that we had three players who scored double figures. This season we're not going to get, well, Diego, we've got two, but Diego's all came in
Well,
the League Cup. So
when you say three got double figures, is that three in the league with double figures?
Mitoma, Danny, I can't remember who the other one was.
No, but was that in the league or
Yeah,
was
it
that
was in
all
the league,
game?
yeah.
League alone,
Pedro.
okay. Yeah, I mean
Murray.
that's the thing is that it's a bit like the early days under Potter. Again, and I know this comes across as an unpopular thing, but Potter really did change the dynamic of how the team plays. It's just it took a long time to bear fruit because we were creating chances and at times playing some really good football. And a lot of fans missed out on a lot of seeing it live because of COVID and the lockdown and everything like that. But and I'm classically thinking of that game in, against Manchester United that we lost about 10 minutes after the full-time whistle, where Trossard hit the bar five times. And we just absolutely pummeled them at times. And you think, well, and it's not the first time where we could have easily got eight against Manchester United. Now, it's, when you say we're not scoring enough goals, we're, at the moment we're scoring enough goals to win the game, but not enough goals, I think, to sort of really underline at times how good some of our play is.
And but I think it's more the fact that the goals aren't being spread through the team as much. So actually, our defence isn't really scoring. We're not scoring much from set pieces. Midfield scored less in the league, and you know, frankly, we were only playing one striker, or seemingly we might as well only have one striker in the squad at the moment because Kostoulas isn't getting a look in. And that one striker being Danny Welbeck, who isn't exactly world-renowned for finishing. He's more known for his all-round play, bringing in players and creating those opportunities. So there is kind of, you know...
I think there's an excess pressure on him, isn't there?
And it goes back to some of this talk around the club kind of admitting that they've given Hertzler an unbalanced squad. And you'd hope that come the summer, that's something that will get addressed. Obviously, we've been unfortunate with a couple of injuries, but we've also sent players out on loan that could have done a job.
Yeah, I'd also say that given his role in the last three or four games as the, quote, number 10, I do think that Jack Hinshelwood will eventually start picking up those goals. He's getting the chances. And we talked about this in recent rules, haven't we, Odie, about him getting in the positions. He knows where to get to. He's the target for the headers and yet just isn't finishing.
Yeah, well, we will come to that because there's a few glaring ones in this game.
But, yeah, I know. He's not a naturalised striker, but he's so he's so versatile. I can see him being kind of the Adam Virgo mould.
Just before kind of move on, I do think, you know, we should give a shout out to the weather because we always play better when the sun's out. You know, I kind of always think, you know, if the sky's blue and white, the stripes do all right. So
I see. I'm still sticking with translucent light. So there you go.
Well, is there any other kind?
But I mean, one of the key elements of this game, and it was. Most quite often and quite glaringly from our opposition at the weekend, but we were guilty of this ourselves at times, was the amount of unforced errors that there were. And our first goal was a classic example of that.
Yeah, I mean, the first half, to be honest, was a little bit messy from both sides. There was a lot of loss of possession. Goalkeeper for Liverpool clearly just had come off the beach somewhere and been told, oh yeah, Alisson's injured, you need to get on. Because the number of terrible passes that he made was incredible. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not sure who to blame really, whether it's the keeper or the defender.
What's the Liverpool goalkeeper's name, Tom?
I
know is he's Georgian.
Yeah.
It's Mark Mashavili.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got an Ashvili at the end.
Mashiel Willie. Yeah, I mean that pass was a weird one. It was, I mean, he kind of belted it. It wasn't along the ground, and the defender just took his eye off it. I mean, it was just Sunday league all round.
Well, this is an issue. I mean, Konate, he's not been the most popular with Liverpool supporters this year. Basically, he's been very much eyeing the exit door and quite literally taking his eye off the ball in this particular case.
Their problem, not ours.
No, it's not. It's not our problem. But it's, you know, there has been some terrible abuse which needs to be called out.
Of course not. Absolutely. However, they still had a throw in to defend. And let's put it this way. If the ball had been knocked down the wing to Matoma and the defender had got there and he knocked it out of play, it's exactly the same scenario. Don't get me wrong.
But it's an, it's, it's there a, was a, I mean, obviously, it was a cheap. When teams concede cheap possession, how often does that end up in a goal? It's like a cheap. If you concede a really cheap corner, and you completely cock it up, and you leak. We always concede. Always.
Are you thinking of Minte's defending here? Because the answer is no, it's not. I mean, let's face it. His classic. I think it was Bournemouth last season, where he tried a double overhead kick, and each one went straight up in the air.
Yeah. Now this is something that's been going back for as long as I've been watching the Albion. No, some over 40
I know
years.
What you're saying is it seems like sodding typical that it works, but yeah. Thankfully, for the most part, we've got away with it.
Yeah, but there was still an awful lot to do with this, and that ball from Ferdi Caglioli, to Gomez to head back powerfully across the goal for Danny Welbeck to head home his 11th goal of the season.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Gomez being that free in the box on that kind of ball, I mean, there was just way too much space around all of our players, really. But brilliant ball in from Ferdi. I think he's one of my kind of shouts for player of the season this year. I think he's been consistent. Yeah. He's a real menace going forward and just puts himself about. But that was a moment of real quality in terms of the ball. And, you know, head back was reasonably simple and nice to see Welbeck.
It was like a volleyball move.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
like...
I'm going to say that header back is seriously underrated, because you're saying, oh, it was a good header back, oh, it was volleyball. There was plenty of power on that, and it meant that Liverpool had to do a lot of chasing.
No, that's what I mean. It was a serve, it was a set, and then a spike from Danny. It was like it was absolutely
yeah, but
fantastic set.
How many times have we cocked that up? And actually, the interesting point is I've seen us, if not score like that, but certainly create chances a fair few like that recently. You notice a lot of the corners are going back to the, well, apart from when Gross takes them, they go to the back post in order to be headed back across the area. And that's where carnage happens. So, yeah, although it was a good header back across the area, sorry, it was a good cross, and you could see that Gomez was going to get his header in. It was a good, clean, powerful header. I mean, the ones I'm thinking of here is I think there was one, if not two, goals scored like that at Chelsea earlier in the season. No, absolutely brilliant. And then Liverpool fans, well, let's face it, Virgil van Dijk decided to have a real scream at the referee about it.
Yes, because his form's absolutely gone out of the window this season. So it's
he was claiming a push.
Long may that continue. There was a lot of fantastic Dutch players on the pitch at the weekend. Unfortunately, none of them for Liverpool, none of them were wearing a red shirt. But
I didn't. I don't know what the Dutch for Schadenfreude is, but you're indulging in it, aren't you?
Well, you know, when it's not exactly a secret that I live with a Liverpool supporter, and she was in the away end at the weekend, and she was actually on telly looking very miserable. So it was,
I know she's our lucky charm, you know.
We're not talking about that. But don't let her know. Don't tell her. Anyway, so this was the first time in his career that Danny's scored more than 10 goals in his career. Last year was the first time he had scored 10 goals in a season. So, you know, this was a very much a hold my beer moment for the second half. But it is a surprise for such a player. And obviously he's now become the leading English goal scorer in the Premier League this season. We're going to talk about Jason Steele in a bit, but were you surprised that he was omitted from the England team squad?
No, because the England team historically has no idea what they're doing. So, no, of course not surprised. You know, I think Welbeck's had a great season, but equally, I'm quite glad that he's not been selected from a selfish reason of the last time. One of our players went to a major tournament and didn't play. He came back and basically couldn't play football for 6 months.
Well, yeah. One thing I would say is that, and I love this as a stat, because it's just one of those things about media's obsession with the Big Six, is that Danny Welbeck, by the time he finishes his career, will be ex-Arsenal, he'll be ex-Manchester United. If my maths are correct, I think he needs two more goals, and that means he's scored two more league goals, and that means he's scored more league goals for Brighton than he has for everyone else combined.
That's a good stat, and obviously with his brace at the weekend, that this adds to his record
after that.
For
yeah,
the
two
Albion
more
as well. as the leading goal scorer in the top flight, because we do include Michael Robinson in that, people, don't forget.
Oh, yeah, no, he's the record holder, full stop. Now he's beaten Robbo's record, absolutely.
But now, Tom, on the show last week, we had Nick Trepanic with us. And Nick was very much of the opinion that our team plays a lot better when it's got Mats Wiefer in it.
I'd agree with that. I think Wiefer is very underrated by our fan base. I think the fact that he's playing out of position or out of his favoured position, I think he does a lot of really good stuff. I think we were talking about it at the weekend, actually. He's not the most naturally gifted player, but he just seems to read the game quite well and put his body in the right place. So it doesn't look good, and quite often he doesn't look great, but he always seems to be in the right place.
I mean,
what I would say about him is he seems to be learning on the job. Now, I think it was, they all blur into each other, but I think it was either the Bournemouth or the Everton game. It's like he'd been taking a bit too much of the Dutch product that you get in their cafes. He was asleep. He wasn't doing anything. Everything he did was pretty much wrong. I think he put a lot of it right when he played against Arsenal. He was actually very, very good. But I think what we've got is it's difficult to judge how he is when you're judging him against the likes of Veltman or even Kadioglu or any other sort of supposed, for want of a better term, recognised fullback. He's learning on the job, and he actually seems to be doing a different job. I think he's almost learning Kadioglu's role, albeit on the other side. But, of course, Kadioglu has been a mainstay of the team pretty much all season. Wiefer's only just come back into the team. Well, I'll say back only just, probably in the last 10 games or so. He's learning, and I think he's getting better. He's still got the odd whoopsie in him, but he is, I mean, let's say a couple of months ago, I was tearing his hair out over his performances. But now, yeah, you're quite right. He's a lot better.
Yeah, Tom?
I think it's also quite interesting. I think we're taking a little bit of the pressure off the fullbacks when they do press up to attack, because I've noticed it's a lot clearer that the likes of Milner is kind of dropping back, and we're almost having a back three when we've got the ball in, just to allow our centre-backs to kind of cover that wing slightly in that transition phase to cut out some of the space, which then is giving Kadioglu or Wiefer the opportunity to actually get back into position. So I think there's little tweaks that are helping.
Additional to that, when Matoma and Minte are both playing, we do have wingers who actually do take their defensive duties very seriously, especially Minte. I wouldn't have Minte as a fullback, but if it was an absolute dire emergency, I think he could do a job there.
Okay,
That's Minte the Red Mist Man, by the way. Yeah.
Okay, all right, Al. I mean, you said this after the game at the weekend. You gave your man of the match to Minte. Yeah. I disagreed. what was it that stood out so much for you about Jan Kuba?
Well, for one, he had Frimpong in his pocket, and he would have had actually him on toast, but for that fact that the referee thought it was okay for him to foul Minte on a nauseatingly regular basis and not do anything about it. So hence he was getting frustrated. That said, he got past him several times. It's no mistake that Frimpong was immediately substituted after the second goal went in, because he didn't even get close to covering Minte's brilliant cross. He got past him several times. Any time he didn't, he was just knocked over, and the referee said, no, get up, play on. I mean, there was a couple of times when he was looking to go over. I get the feeling, I'm going to take up your point. You thought that, again, he played with the red mist, and that when he got fouled, he looked like he was stropping around and had the similar problem like he had. I think, was it a...
I didn't say that.
No, you did, actually. And I know this because you had 11 pints of heavy in at the time.
Well, maybe.
And I can't remember if it was the Brentford or the Sunderland game where he got subbed, because it looked... That was minutes before he was going to get sent off.
Yeah, that was at Sunderland, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that you felt it was going to happen the same again today. I think maybe some teams have actually realised, well, actually wind him up, because he looks like he's going to go.
I think he could have quite easily been sent off, actually, because it was like he did dive after when he was on the yellow. So it was,
But that said, I thought he was very creative for us. It was an excellent outlet. He had one of his best games for us in a long, long time. Okay. I thought he was superb, and he kept their right back, you know, No. He hates it. And let's face it, if you were going to be that Liverpool right back, you think, great, Minté's going
No.
off, and then you realise Matoma's coming on in his place.
Not just Matoma, the real Matoma, but we're going to
Yes.
come to that in a minute.
Hang on, well,
But now,
hang
Tom.
on. Can we go for the decider then here? Sorry, Tom, we're going to ask you to choose. Get off the fence. Did Minté have a good game?
Yeah, I thought he was a candidate for man of the match. I thought he was up and down the pitch. I thought he did his defensive duties well, cut out the Liverpool ball a lot. And actually, I like the fact that he was a bit more direct with his run in
Yeah.
and attack. What my one complaint was, there's a few times where he's beaten the man, but his head is just down. So if
That's
he'd looked
exactly what I was
up,
going to say. I mean,
if he'd
there
looked
was a
up, he
chance.
could have created a better chance.
There was that chance where a beautiful ball round the corner from Danny Welbeck, which put Yankuba in on goal. He just did not look up at all. I mean, to be fair, there wasn't. He only actually had Gomez with him, so there wasn't really another option. But basically, if he had stuck his head up even for a millisecond, he would have seen that the finish would have been to the far
I
stick
think
rather
he
than
never
to the.
really had the. Are you talking about the thing in the second half?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at that again. He never really had the ball under his control. So he had to look down in
Yeah.
order just to get it out from under his feet. And it wasn't until he got, he was right. I thought he could have taken the shot a step earlier. It's because it was in the wrong place. He didn't have it under control.
Now, Tom,
AD.
we've been watching the album for many time, many, many, many years, and we've delighted in watching over 500 performance from our skipper, Lewis Dunk, and we have seen him nonchalantly head the ball backwards to his goalkeeper many, many times. I think this is the first time that he made a mistake.
So I have a slightly differing view. I think everyone knew what was going to happen, including Liverpool. And I think if you watch the run that the Liverpool player made, he was just gambling on the fact that Dunk was going to do that. So I think some credit has to be put to Liverpool for doing their homework on that kind of ball. It's a lump up front. You know that in all likelihood, if it's in that position, it's going to do that. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more teams now coming round the back just gambling on that. It's just really unfortunate
I mean, it's
that
not.
there was no real communication and potentially Bart was in the wrong place for that
Yeah,
head back.
but it's not the first time we've been done by a simple ball over the top, though, is it? Let's face it.
No, but the point here is additionally, is I think that as well as Dunk, obviously, is a boo-boo. But no, I mean, as Tom said, everyone could see what he was going to do. And no one, or one assumes that no one said away.
Yeah,
I mean,
that
Bart could
was.
see what was happening. Van Hegger's next to him. He's got Milner in front of him, probably Gross as well. None of them are going to say, no, don't, they're not going to sort of like give him chapter and verse. Like Ben Roberts, away. He should have got a call to say,
Well,
basically, don't head it
that's what
back.
Lewis was saying when it straight after it happened
Oh, yeah,
about
where
the
was the call?
communication, and he said, "Well, why didn't someone tell me he was there?" But I mean, obviously, he was
Well, we could
facing
all
the
see what
bigger.
was happening. Like I say,
Yeah.
Tom has just said, everyone could see what was about to happen. I think personally, the only the main but the, I mean, there was obviously Dunk's thing is, I personally think he was too far out in order to do that. And I'll take your point, was Bart in the right place or the wrong place? Bart was in the right place. Because there's every probability he was expecting Dunk to head it away. I don't know. But as you say, Liverpool player gambled, got his reward. The only thing that slightly worried me was when he tried to do it again with a little chest back and Bart had to make a blinding save. And then you
That
realise,
was
Lewis, you're
Liverpool's
playing a
second
bit
best
nervously here,
opportunity.
mate.
This is true. Now, what you is a one player that you've mentioned earlier there, Tom, is Ferdy Kalliola, and he I love I just love him. He's just marauds, doesn't he? He's just like he swashbuckles.
And
He's just
yeah, and I think that
what?
it's also like he doesn't pull his socks up. It's just that kind of really like he's just an iconic player, I think. He's going to be one of those players that you just remember for a long time, socks
Yeah.
down, just
Well,
running constantly.
I
I'll tell you who has the potential to be the next. He has potential to be the next Cowday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I met him in the tunnel after a game. I think it was last season, after the Wolves Cup game, I think it was. And he was just there in, like, in shorts and this jumper. And he just looked exactly like a PE teacher. It's just a bit of a dude, really. But I mean, he does like to get a shot away. And he had a Marmash Adebili, did have to make a great save for him. But amazingly, Ferdy hasn't actually scored this season. I was amazed when I saw that stat.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was a great shot from just outside the box as well. I mean, it just opened up for him. I don't think that was going to be the original plan, but then it was like, oh, I might as well have a dig, and he got his boot behind that, and that was yeah. I mean, he deserved a bit more.
If he does score a goal, whatever his first goal is, you know it's going to be a worldie.
Well, he
And
did
it's
score last season, so actually at Liverpool, but it was
of course, yes.
before he busted his toe. But it was, yeah. I mean, again, he's just a wonderful. Okay, but let's talk about the goal then. It was a great ball from Minté. Hinch played it across the goal. Danny and De Julie did the rest. Nobody celebrated.
I actually told someone to calm down because it's coming back for offside.
Now, I think I must be the only person in the stadium who didn't think it was. I was confident. I was pretty certain that Hinch was behind the Liverpool defenders when the cross came in. It was that early, but I actually thought that Welbeck was further back from Hinch's return than he was. Actually, he was closer to being offside than I thought. I was actually fairly confident that Welbeck. Well, I thought that Welbeck was more onside than he actually was. Let's put it that way. I think he was less offside than everyone else thought. But for me, I thought he was more offside than
Well,
I thought he
here's
was.
the thing, because we're so used to seeing the lines drawn from people's from a defender's feet or knee or get left gonad or whatever it is, but this was actually drawn from the ball,
Right. Now, I've got a bone to pick with them about that because I'm pretty certain that Hinshelwood's toe was ahead of the ball, in which
depends
case
on
it
who.
should be from the foot, not the ball.
But then I think this is the issue. If you look on social media, everything that's being shared is just a still frame, right? And is that the right still frame? And this is still one of my biggest bugbears with offside is how can you be exactly sure when the ball leaves someone's foot and get the exact still frame? Because the frame rate of cameras and stuff, there's enough variance for more than 5 centimeters anyway.
Well, there's that as well. But the other thing is, and this is we're going to be going on about this for the next few years, I reckon. But 'cause I'm still so incredibly angry about the goal that Danny got disallowed at Fulham, which incorrectly disallowed. And it's well known that that's actually it's not just the frame rate, but at Fulham the way obviously it's one of the oldest stadiums in the world. And where the cameras are positioned for this, it's actually slightly different. Think about the cameras at Pompey for that for exactly the same reason. They're at weird places, and the frame rate is always wrong.
Well, thankfully they're not using the ground anymore. But I remember a game about 2 or 3 years ago at Goodison Park. Lewis Dunk got a
Oh
goal.
yeah,
He got a
worldie
goal
goal.
disallowed for offside, and the camera was in no position. It was a horribly low res, very pixely thing. You think there is absolutely no way you can actually get a definitive decision one way or the other on this. From memory, the flag didn't go up. There's no way you can overrule it because there's no evidence to actually say that the one way or the other, in which case you then go with umpire's call.
No, Tom.
The semi-automated stuff as well, the bit that gets me with it is they, well, other than on Saturday, they don't show you the ball or where the ball was and when
No.
it's been kicked. So it could literally be any still frame that they pick. And it just doesn't feel very transparent.
No.
Yeah. Well,
No.
Danny didn't celebrate, and I love the fact in the interview afterwards he said, "Well, I celebrated wildly at Fulham, and it got somehow
Yeah.
got ruled
And
out,
my
so I just
elbow
didn't
was
want to risk
offside, he
it."
said.
He
Yeah.
said, "I didn't want to risk it." He says, then going on to leapfrog a 6'4" fella.
And therein lies the point. I mean, we've all talked about it, about the fans not being able to celebrate, but there is probably the biggest thing, which we probably knew was the case anyway, the fact that the players themselves, And let's face it, what's Danny just done here? I mean, he didn't know at the time. He's just scored the winner against Liverpool. And in fact, now I think about it, the winner against Liverpool last season, we had to wait for an incorrect offside decision to be overturned for Jack Hinchwood's goal in the last minute. And it's all very, very unsatisfactory. It's one thing when the fans can't, but if the players themselves can't celebrate it, you know, and let's face it, that's probably one of the, a lot of players that, yeah, they get their money, they get their adulation, but they love celebrating goals. And if they can't do it at the moment they score it, I won't say what's the point, but what's the point?
No. Okay. Well, before we move on from this, I did mention it briefly a minute ago. Kuri Mutoma came on the pitch, Tom, and we haven't really seen the best of him this season. He's clearly been carrying some sort of injury, and he's not been fully over on as good as he possibly can be. But the real Kuri Mutoma turned up this week, and it was just an absolute joy to behold.
I mean, as you said, Liverpool probably breathed a sigh of relief seeing Minté go off after what he did to them. And then Mutoma comes on and the first thing he does is slice through four of them and create a chance. I mean, just literally that was a moment you just sat up in the stands and was like, Matoma's back.
It was. Yeah. I mean, I said at the time, he went through that Liverpool defence like they weren't there because they weren't there.
And then he did it again a couple of minutes later. And, you know, it just then opened up the other side of the pitch completely as well because Liverpool had to pretty much triple him up. And
even frankly, that wasn't enough. There's a fellow that wants to go to the World Cup, isn't it?
But, yeah, he's just, it's, you know, we haven't seen him get to the byline and just go past players like that for such a long time.
Can I make a point here? I think that Minté was, and now admittedly Frimpong went off immediately after we scored the second goal, but if he saw Minté having as much fun as he did, then Mutoma was looking at him thinking, well, I can have a nice day here.
But is this also something that goes back to maybe some tactical changes? Because our wingers throughout the season have kind of been cutting back in and have been a bit slower, whereas both Minté and Mutoma on Saturday were much more direct, were taking on their man a lot more and actually getting good success from it. Whereas, you know, earlier in the season, they'd have probably been looking to cut back.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that whole notion of cutting back. Because let's face it, if we've got, for instance, Minté playing on the right and he's predominantly left-footed and Mutoma the other side. Now, one, obviously, they can use their, quote, wrong foot. But if you've got two people on either side who are there to supposedly put the crosses in, one's a wing and one's possibly a fullback. And let's face it, it's actually Van Hecker that puts a lot of crosses in. at least with that, you've got, say, on the right-hand side, you'll have Minté doing the left-foot crosses from that side with Weaver doing them from the right-hand side, and vice versa. You'll have Mutoma doing the right-foot crosses from the left-hand side, and you'll have Cadioglu doing the left-foot crosses. So the whole notion of cutting in, I don't have a problem with per se, unless it, like you say, slows up the attack.
Yeah. Okay, and again, just before we move on from this, one other thing, which is quite a big thing that actually happened in the game, was the fact that Lewis Dunk picked up a second yellow card, which is going to rule him out. Not a second yellow card. He didn't get sent off, did he? He picked up a yellow card.
Second banning of the season.
Yeah, he's now picked up a 2-game ban. So we're probably not going to see him now until next August. That's when our next game is, I think.
But Tom, do you have a problem with his standing, Boscagli?
Sorry, no, I don't. But I did have a problem with the willingness of the referee to dish out yellow cards on Saturday. The fact that there was 10 yellow cards given in that game felt
dirty a game, was it really?
No, it felt mad, and a lot of those yellows felt very soft. And that Dunk one in particular, I mean, Verbruggen's gone over to tell him to leave it and go up, and then Dunk's the one that's got the yellow card for it. It just felt a bit weird. It's like the referee wanted to give a yellow straight away for time wasting. There was no warnings or anything before, so I think Dunkey was a little bit harsh.
If we're talking about actually the letter of the law here, now for me, I think it was Welbeck or Minté, I can't remember which, got booked for not moving back from a free kick. Now, In the terms of the game, I've got no problem with that yellow card. It's a stupid thing, and I want to see it stamped out. The whole, standing on top of a free kick that your opponent's got, that's fine. Good yellow card, but I think it's not that so much. It's that every single football fan wants to see consistency from the referees. And I mean, not just across the match, yes, but across the season. Nearly every free kick that's, say, in the middle third gets slowed down because someone then parks themselves right in front and the players then turn around and pass the ball back. And that means that, bearing in mind it's that team's free kick, they should be able to play it where they want to. Now, the Liverpool player doing what he did, I think perfectly within his rights, and I have no problem with the yellow card. But I have seen it also where a player will whack it against another player. Excuse me. And the referee said, "Well, you just hit it against him." Yeah, but it's the defender's obligation to be 10 yards away. They should be able to take the free kick when they want to. So
But you know what
it's
else you
just,
could do,
I'm just
though,
calling for consistency.
You're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the wonderful Flowers Unlimited, Alan. Oh, are we not?
I think you know my routine, and bearing in mind I don't have a voice, I'd let you do it this time.
Well, no, I want to see. I want to hear what Sean Dyche has got to say about Flowers Unlimited.
You rotter. Go to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, where you'll find Flowers Unlimited for all your gifts for birthdays and weddings and funerals and thank yous and
christenings.
Christenings and up yours if you have to. You can get flowers, chocolate, champagne, all sorts of presents there. You can also get it online, flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. If you tell them you're a Brighton season ticket holder, you'll get 20% discount. That's 20% discount. So head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, and that's Flowers Unlimited. And thank you very much to David Costa for sponsoring the show. Can I have my voice back now, please?
You can have your voice back.
I'm Dean Gallagher, or Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123, or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Another thing, just quickly on the notice board, is a note for your diaries. We will be broadcasting live as part of the Reverbathon, which is coming up very shortly, which is the annual Radio Reverb fundraiser. I think it's the 2nd.
We're on the 2nd of May, yep.
2nd of May. So look
which
out
I think
for
that. Which I think is when our next game is, and I mean 2nd of May 2029.
Yeah. But anyone listening who's got a business who would like to sponsor that show, please contact us at thealbionroar.co.uk. We'd really appreciate everyone's support, and if we can get as many sponsors as we possibly can for that game, that would be really, really helpful.
Can I just re-say that email address is thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk.
yeah, so please get in touch. Now, Tom, a few years ago, we had a lovely time going to some fine, fine cities across the world, which you do on pretty much on a daily basis because you're just like you're just a travel hound, is what you are. But is the European dream still on?
Well, I mean, if you take into the account that, you know, we need an English team to draw once now in European competitions to guarantee that extra space. The fact that City have won the League Cup this year, and then hopefully another team's going to win the FA Cup, that's not going to ruin our European qualification.
That we're not going for Port Vale.
So not Port Vale. I think, you know, you're looking at eighth or higher, right?
Possibly even 10th, depending on other results.
Well, it could go to 9th as well.
Yeah.
If we have some winners in Europe. So that's 100% achievable, especially if we somehow manage to keep our run going and beat teams that are down the bottom of the table.
That's always the problem there. So don't be daft. It's a long story of it. I mean, I did a Liverpool show this week, and we were previewing the game ahead of Saturday. And I said, I have absolutely no fear about playing Liverpool whatsoever. In fact, I very much expect us to win. Wolves and Burnley, on the other hand, I expect the complete opposite. So those are the games where we do historically, famously slip up.
Well, we did beat Burnley over this season, and I think fairly comfortably. So,
and throwing Spurs. I mean, that Spurs look like the hardest team to play for us at the moment because they're the worst form team in the league.
I mean, it is a little bit of a strange thing. We're going to talk about the narrative shift, basically, because a few weeks ago, everyone was on their uppers. It was everyone was trying to predict who the next manager was going to be, and it was all very much doom and gloom. And now, 5 wins out of 4, the narrative has completely changed.
5 wins out of 4, that's cheating.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I know. All right, 4 wins out of 5. All right. Yeah, well, you know what? I'm claiming the Arsenal game as a moral victory. Moral victory.
Well, they are a distinctly immoral side. You're quite right. Listen, I think that the point is that you look at the run-in and... Yeah, we do have plenty of banana skins there. And let's face it, we still have Spurs, Chelsea and Manchester United, but we do not have any need to fear them. I mean, we're not going to win all 7 games, but we don't have any need to fear those particular games that we've got coming up. Like I say, the banana skins are Wolves and Burnley, absolutely. But I'd like to think that we've shed the spectre of the Palace game now.
I think so. But, I mean, when you look at what else is going on in the league at the moment, and, you know, obviously Spurs in a complete and utter meltdown.
Good.
Worry me that they're now being linked with De Zerbi, but I don't think even he could turn that around in that short space of time.
I'm loving the fact, actually, there's a good possibility of Spurs playing Lincoln in the league next season.
That would be
nice. Well, it's actually down to, and let's this is a kind of a nice bookend here. One of my very first football memories was Spurs getting relegated in 77. They got promoted again straight away in 78. But in that season, 77, I remember this, the old second division, what is now the championship, Wolves were the champions, Forest were second, Chelsea were third. But also in that division were Hereford United and York. So, yes, I can remember it when Chelsea played Hereford United. Now, it's not a slight on those two clubs when I say, you know, why shouldn't they? Because they were there on merit. Absolutely. But there is a good chance that Spurs and Lincoln will be playing each other next season in the league on merit. And I think that's a very nice bookend.
I mean, I don't think it will happen because obviously Spurs will clearly beat us. that's the way the narrative is going to go. But Tom, there is so much of a soap opera going on elsewhere as well. I mean, you've got the stuff that's going on at Chelsea. You've got the stuff that's going on with Liverpool. There's all sorts of stuff going on with all these other clubs, and yet it was happening with us as well. And it just takes a couple of good results to change the narrative.
I mean, it's just been a season of inconsistency across the entire Premier League. Everything's gone.
Even Arsenal.
Even Arsenal. But I think, you know, our issue was we had one of the longer runs in it. And I think where the concern was, especially from my side, is what Spurs are experiencing right now, is if we did get dragged into that scrap, our squad is not equipped with the players to try and win those fights. And I think Spurs have the same, where they have players that are a bit more lightweight. They're not going to turn up and play ugly and just try and win at all costs at the moment, as they're finding out. Whereas your West Hams and your Forests, I think, have squads that are built a bit more to win like that. And I think that was my concern when we were dropping down.
It's interesting the point you're making there, AD, about sort of stuff going on at Chelsea, stuff going on at Spurs and things like that, and all this chaos and what have you. And for me, actually, the reason that I think that I was never that worried, I was disappointed. In fact, I was like the rest of us, I was cheesed off, especially after that Palace game. And I was cheesed off about the results that we were getting before that.
Yeah.
But I always felt that actually we don't really need to do a great deal. Certainly the club doesn't. I mean, it was down to Hertzler to sort out whatever it was that he had identified the problem, should there have been one, actually of being. And in the great scheme of things, the club as a whole has not done a huge amount. You know, sometimes when there's chaos, there's the panic that you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do that, you've got to plug this, you've got to leak, you've got to sorry repair that and what have you. Now, the club just carried on doing what it was doing and let the ship right itself. Whereas at Spurs, and let's face it, Spurs' malaise has been a long time coming. Relative stability has actually, all right, we're not such a big club, but our relative stability has actually allowed us to recover.
Yeah, it was one of my favourite things last season when we were leaving the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium at the end of last season, and which saw them finish 17th. Now, what's the postcode of Spurs, Tom?
N17.
And someone who just happened to have a Sharpie with them, not me, I hasten to add, decided to put N17th on all of the road signs up the road, which is delightful. But I mean, that is what they're aiming for now.
Absolutely. Do you know what? That's their problem. Listen, yeah. We've only got a couple of minutes left on the show, so we must have to talk about probably the most surprising thing that a German's done this month, and that's select a Brighton player for England, Tom. Tell me, were you expecting it?
I mean, I don't think Jason Steele was expecting a phone call. So let's be honest. I mean, Jason Steele, what a story, though. I mean, you look at the Sunderland Till I Die documentary, he was down and out, the worst thing to ever happen. Signs for Brighton as a third choice, and everyone's going, why on earth are Brighton bringing him in? And then since then, you know, he's gone through phases where he's been our first choice under De Zerbi for best part of a season, played European football, is genuinely one of the most likeable players and just a great all-round guy. And he's probably going to have a summer paid golfing in the US. I mean, what a time to be Jason Steele.
The only thing that worries me is he going to be able to get out again? Okay.
Well, he's not there to compete with Jordan Pickford, who quite rightly at the moment is England's number one, I think. But he's there to be a training goalkeeper, to basically, apparently, like, particularly with the penalty situation, and he's probably one of the best penalty savers around, apparently.
Also, Pickford's footwork isn't great either.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily put that on Jason Steele's CV. He can help with penalties when Bart saved one mishit penalty in his career. So,
but there is that.
It's true.
No, but I mean, I think it's just famously he saved four penalties in a shootout. Admittedly, half an hour after making a complete dropsy in the last minute of a game against Newport. So,
yeah.
But yeah, four penalty saves are pretty impressive. But I think, no, Tom's right. It's not just about that. It's, I mean, from what we're reading now, I don't know if there's any sort of trolling going on here, but there's often, and it seems to be the case with those players who play at the high end of the Premier League, that they have their little camps and their cliques and what have you. And of course, Jason isn't interested in that. He sees straight through it. You know, this is a squad that hopefully here now doesn't have those cliques. It might be a bit of a gear crunch socially for him to play with England and realise that there are all these, you know, sort of like little hive minds that are doing their own thing. But he's going to go straight through the middle of that and say, look, we're here for England. We're here for one purpose. Yeah. And I'm going to make you keepers as good as you can be. Yeah. Albeit, hopefully, then they'll forget everything they've been told come August and then be not as good as they were.
But for exactly the same reason, that's the reason I think Danny will go. I think that he will be. I don't think Tuchel needs to see him. He knows what he can do. He knows he's not necessarily going to go there and be the number one striker. Obviously, that's going to be Harry Kane. But if you need backup to him, who better than Danny? Who better at the moment? I mean, the stats back him up. But that's another subject for another day, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that Until the World Cup kicks off, if it kicks off at all. But again, another story for another day. But until then, thank you so much to Mr. Tom Hylands. Thank you to Sean Dykes. I mean, Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on a podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks. Bye.